Hey everybody, welcome to the Bernier's a Turd podcast. My name is Jason Carello, and I'm your host. This time around, we'll be talking about the first round of the playoffs, which was incredibly exciting. We'll also be previewing the second round. Holy halak! It's Chris Withers!
Wow, it was an incredible first round. Some great storylines to touch on. A lot of people saying that might have been the best first round in NHL history.
Some people are indeed suggesting that this, in all the storied history, the hallowed halls of the NHL, you know, the Hockey Hall of Fame in Toronto, this might have been the best ever. I don't know if I buy that, but gosh darn it, it was fun.
There were a few really, really good series.
What I'd like to do, first of all, is I would like to address something that we touched on last time, and that's the name of the podcast, Chris.
Bernier is a turd.
Bernier's a turd. Now, Steve Bernier has not lived up to his potential during his tenure with the Canucks. Would you agree with that?
I would definitely agree with that.
Had an outstanding first round against the Los Angeles Kings.
He was the second best right winger on Vancouver.
This guy was such a big turd, he was named the Turd Star.
He was named the Turd Star. Was that Game 5?
Game 5, he was the Turd Star.
He bookended the scoring, didn't he, first and last goal?
He put together a two-goal performance. He stapled guys to the boards. They were stuck there. There was so much turd on them, they were actually stuck to the boards.
Yeah.
There was so much poop in the end. Like, the crease was no longer blue.
No, there was no blue ice.
There was no blue.
It was all brown.
It was brown, and that's the end of the poop portion of the show. I would like to say Steve Bernier had a great first round, awesome first round. I'm proud of him that he totally proved us wrong, at least for those six games.
No, it was good on him. We're going to continue with the Bernier's a Turd podcast in hopes of continuing to motivate him.
Yes. I have no idea if this podcast has had any effect on Mr. Bernier. We continue to call him a turd, and if at any time he stops performing in this way, then we look great because we knew it was coming. If he ends up scoring a cup-winning goal, well, gosh darn it, we'll look silly, but we'll have a cup in Vancouver.
You know what? I really don't think we'll look any less idiotic than we already do.
That's a very good point indeed. Okay, so let's take a recap of the first round. Do you want to do the Canucks first or last?
Let's go with the Canucks right
now. Okay, Luongo.
Luongo, a lot of people saying he started off shaky. I don't buy that. I think that he played pretty darn well the whole series, especially games 5 and 6. But yeah, I had no problem whatsoever with Luongo's play.
No, I think this guy has settled in to his routine.
Yes.
Right? I think he's back. He's got his swagger back. He wants to play the Hawks, which we'll talk about in a little while when we get into the second round. This guy looks like a $6 million goalie right now.
Yes. Yeah, he's laughing, he's joking, he is relaxed.
I haven't seen him.
Man, that was a good save on Ryan Smith.
Outstanding stop on Ryan Smith in, was that also game 5?
That was game 6.
Or that was game 6. Outstanding stop. I mean, he had the game saver in game 2, was it, in the overtime?
Yeah.
I mean, just overall, an absolutely outstanding series for Luongo. I think the best he's played in a while.
Yeah.
Now in front of him, he also had some of the best team defense we've seen in a long time.
And it was team defense because some of the Canucks defensemen were not playing up to their usual caliber. Andrew Alberts, as bizarre as it may seem, actually played below his usual caliber for most
of
the series.
You think so? I don't agree. I think he had a really good series, actually.
No, I think he had one good game.
That's more than he had before the playoffs started.
You know why you think he had a really good series? It's because he got pulled twice from two of the games by Alain Vigneault.
Now, true enough, Alain Vigneault, he shortened the bench in a couple of situations. Alberts got less than 5 minutes playing time in game 4, I think it was.
Yeah.
And he was actually benched. He was benched for one game, wasn't he?
You know what? I think it was 5 minutes of playing time in game 3. And then he got benched for a couple.
He had all those penalty minutes in the first two games. And then he was bent. He was in the box.
Yeah. I thought he sat 2, but I guess it could have been 1.
Yeah, I mean, when he came back, he played a hell of a game. Get 5. Looked really good.
The whole team looked really good.
The whole team looked really good. And the crowd was chanting, Alberts, Alberts, Alberts. I mean, that was totally unexpected.
I do not remember that.
Chris, you stubborn bastard. All right, fine. Let's move on to Edler.
That was his coming out party. Game 1 was phenomenal, where he read the play. Who was it that he absolutely leveled in front
of? Doughty.
Was it Doughty?
That was Doughty. Who, by the way, 22 years old is this guy or 20?
I think he's 20.
20 years old. This guy looked like Rob Blake, Ray Bourque, Nicholas Lidstrom.
Dare I say Bobby Orr? The way he plays two-way hockey, the way he's always down by the opposing goal line.
Bobby Orr, that's pretty lofty for a 20-year-old to throw Bobby Orr's name in there. I don't know. He's an outstanding, outstanding defenseman. If LA ever lets this guy go, it's a travesty.
They won't.
They should not.
He may choose to run away at some point, but I don't see why he would with the core they've got.
They need to build around Doughty. He is just a stud. I cannot say enough good things about this guy. Michael Samuelson, leading goal scorer after round one.
Mm-hmm. Tied Pavel Bure's Canucks series record with 7 goals.
As well as tying Cliff Ronning's record for 5 straight games with a goal in the postseason.
Hmm.
Now, he didn't get a goal in game 6, but he still had a couple of helpers.
Yep.
And he was a spark plug.
That shot that he has when he uses it is just amazing. You know, the one that he scored, I think it was game 5, where he was kind of on the half boards, but shading towards the blue line, and just shot it top right corner out of nowhere.
Yeah, and he uses the defenseman as a screen really well, and he gets his shot through. This is the thing that I think the Canucks have trouble with, and they had trouble with it in the first part of the series against LA. LA was blocking all kinds of shots. Washington had all kinds of problems with Montreal. Oh my, did I say holy halak at the beginning?
You did.
I'd like to say Montreal played out of their halak and minds. Yes, I'm stealing tweets from other people. It's brilliant. I mean, Samuelson uses that shot as well as anybody.
Yes.
As well as anybody in the league.
Yeah.
And just an outstanding series. Can he keep it up?
Yes. He's been playing like that since he got rejected from the Swedish Olympic team.
Do you know he's got 15 goals in the last 17 games he's played?
That's fantastic.
That is
I did not amazing. Know that, but that's an amazing stat.
That is amazing. That is just... I'm trying to wrap my head around just how good they look when they're on their game. Mm-hmm. The question is, can they stay on their game? This is edging into our prediction for the second round. But last year, the Canucks swept the Blues. They actually took game 1 against Chicago, and they were up 2-0 in game 2, and they ended up losing the series.
I'm going to say completely different animal this year.
You think so?
I think so.
So what is it about Chicago, or what is it about Vancouver that makes it a different situation?
I think it's a combination of the mindset going in. The fans, definitely, and to some extent the players last year, took Chicago way too lightly. They were not recognized as an elite team before they beat the Canucks last year.
But these guys didn't take them lightly. They won game 1. They were up in game 2. It's not that they took them lightly. It's that Alain Vigneault didn't think that Vancouver could skate with Chicago for an entire series. So he collapsed into a defensive shell.
Now you're stealing quotes from Mike Brophy of Sportsnet, I believe.
Did he say the same thing?
He said exactly the same thing.
Well, yes. I got to agree with Brophy then.
Yeah.
I didn't read his column, but I totally agree with that. That it was, you could tell, it was a coaching mistake. The team started to fall back into a turtle around Luongo, and they just let Chicago come.
Yeah, they gave them way too much space, especially through the neutral zone. And we saw that when the Canucks looked like they were in trouble in the early part of that LA series. The Canucks didn't really get effective on the penalty kill until they started actually challenging Los Angeles in the neutral zone and denying them that blue line with speed. And that's the same thing they're going to have to do in Chicago.
And one thing that I really think, and this is why the Sedins are either going to make or break this series for Vancouver. If we have the puck, if Vancouver plays a puck possession game, which they should, they're going to beat Chicago. If they let Chicago carry the puck, because how many times have you seen, Chicago is one of the few teams in the league, like Pittsburgh, like even Ottawa sometimes, like Washington, but those guys, they cycle the puck, but they don't cycle the puck behind the net. They cycle the puck up around the blue line. You'll see Patrick Kane get the puck in the corner, he'll skate back towards the blue line and across, and then he'll turn around and come back across the blue line and back down to the circle. It's like nothing I've seen before. I've never seen a guy do that. Like even going back into the 70s, when there was more room for players to skate, they didn't skate in the same way.
It's going to depend a lot on the matchups that Chicago chooses to exercise. If they try and go head-to-head, Kane and Taves against the Sedins, Canucks are going to win the series.
All right. That's it. Basically, we're going into our second round predictions already.
Sure.
Okay, so I'm picking Vancouver in six.
As am I.
I think Vancouver's going to win it at home.
I will add a proviso.
A caveat, as it were.
A caveat. That if the game, if the series goes to game seven, Chicago will win.
Because it's in Chicago?
In Chicago, yeah. The series will be won at home, either in game six or game seven.
Hmm. Well, both teams have been strong at home, but they've got a good building.
They do. You know, right from the anthems, which are the best in sports, the fans are just jacked in Chicago.
Okay. Next up, Boston Philly. Boston's a surprise. And did I mention? By the way, Chris, before we get into that, I just wanted to go over last round. I called Philly, didn't I? Oh yeah, I did. I called Philly to win, and they won.
Oh my goodness. Jason, if you had the balls to put your money where your mouth was and actually pick Philadelphia when the money was on the line,
right,
you'd be a somewhat wealthier man right now. You do not have the courage of your convictions.
Huh. You know I'm going to take that out. That's dirty.
It's dirty pool.
That's dirty pool. Chris is talking about a bracket pool that I have at work. And basically in that one, I actually did choose New Jersey to win.
Chris is talking about Jason being a waffle, which he accused me of some two podcasts ago.
What basically we have going on here is a battle of attrition, because I'm just going to cut all this out anyway.
All right.
So yeah, I mean, last round I went 5-for-8. And you went 3-for-8? Is that correct?
I thought I was 4-for-8.
4-for-8? Okay, so I got one more than you because I picked Philly, right? Yeah, everything else we had pretty much the same. By the way, you predicted that Halak would steal a game, which he did.
And that was, I don't know, what's the level above theft? Is it grand larceny?
Grand larceny?
Yeah.
Yeah, rape, I think is in there. Yeah, Halak raped the Capitals, basically. And I picked Washington in three, and Washington did win three games in the series. So I'm happy with that. Boston-Philly.
Boston-Philly. It's going the distance, and Boston has the edge on home ice. Boston in seven.
Boston in seven. That's this one, I think, could go either way, and it all rests on Brian Boucher.
Yeah.
If Boucher plays a good series, Philly in five.
So bizarre. There's some guy in Vegas that made a lot of money predicting that Boston and Philadelphia would match up in the second round.
All you got to do is put your $5 down and you might win, right? There are guys who make a living at that at the racetrack. They just put $5 on the long shot every time. So, yeah, I mean, if Boucher puts a series together, just like he did against New Jersey, you're looking at a short series. Because Boston, even with Savard back in the lineup, they don't have a lot of scoring.
Yeah,
scoring is their big problem.
Yeah, the injuries to Philadelphia are going to come into play. I think Carter's still out, isn't he? Or is it Richards? One of those two's out.
And also Gagne.
Yes.
Yeah. Gagne's out. It really comes down to scoring. Whichever team scores is going to win. I hate to do a Larshide there, but whichever team scores the most goals is going to win.
Probably. So, usually, according to Larshide.
Yeah, usually if you put more pucks in the net than the other guy, you're going to win the game. I do agree with you, though. I think Boston's going to take it. The only way Philly takes it is if Boucher stands on his head.
I think Boucher is the most likely player in the second round to have a drop-off from his first-round performance.
Right. And they've had such a rest between
the
series. And Boston's still riding high.
And we saw that with the Canucks last year. A long rest in the playoff never works.
I think Boston in six, but I am adding the little asterisk beside it, you know, in case Boucher has a good series, because then it's going to be short and Philly's going to go. Pittsburgh must just be laughing right now. Because they don't have to play Boston.
They don't have to play Boston. They don't have to play Washington.
They have to play Halak.
Sidney Crosby individually has got to be laughing.
Now, I think Pittsburgh figures out Halak in about 5 minutes. They also don't have the fragility of the Capitals. The Capitals have a bunch of sucky babies on that team. Ovechkin was a sucky baby at the Olympics.
Yes.
He was a sucky baby many times before. That's just who he is. I mean, he's too moody. Crosby's not moody.
For those of you looking for a new drinking game at home, every time Jason Carrillo says sucky baby, take
sucky
a
baby.
Shot.
Sucky baby. Sucky baby. Yeah, so I really do think. I think it's a completely different makeup. Pittsburgh makes short work of the Canadiens.
I don't know that it's going to be that short.
I'll say Pittsburgh in 5.5 games.
5.5?
Yeah.
So they're going to be leading 5-0 by the midway point of the second period in game 6, and the game's going to be over? Is that what you're calling?
Yeah, there's going to be a lightning strike or a terrorist attack or something, and they're just going to call the game.
Yeah, I've got Pittsburgh in 6. I think if Montreal can maintain the systems play that they used against Washington, they're going to be somewhat successful. They're not going to be as successful because Pittsburgh just doesn't play as much off the rush as Washington does, and that's what Montreal was defending more often than not.
Also, I mean, you've got so much experience on the Penguins. I mean, guys like Billy Guerin, you just don't see that on the Capitals.
No.
Right? You don't have that on the roster. I mean, Sidney Crosby, 14 points in the first round. Now, Ovechkin was not a slug. I mean, he got 5 goals, 5 assists for 10 points. He was a +5. He was not poor in his performance. And look at the shot totals. 133 shots in the last 3 games, and Halak just stoned him.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't like the way Ovechkin played that series. I don't think most of the shots that he took had a reasonable chance to go in. A lot of the times he was just throwing them at the net.
Do you think anything about that the no goal that was called? I mean, he did put one in the net, and a very controversial call to take that away from him in that last game.
I happen to like the call. I think Brad Watson has got balls of steel for making that call in Washington in Game 7 in that situation. Yeah, I don't have a problem with the call. He was clipped. I think it affected Halak's ability to stop the puck, and I think it was a good compromise. I don't think it warranted a 2-minute penalty.
Before the podcast, we were talking about it, and you applauded the fact because you want to see that level of tolerance or no tolerance for goalie interference.
Yes.
I agree with you. My big problem with it is consistency.
Mm-hmm.
There was one goal that LA scored, for example, where Luongo was against his post and Drew Doughty actually just flicked Luongo's stick out of his hand.
Was it Doughty? I thought it was Johnson.
Well, one of them. I think it was Doughty. It was a really heads-up play by the LA player, yeah, but he flicked it out of his hand. Or maybe it was Doughty who scored the goal.
No, you know who it was? It was Dustin Brown.
And maybe it was Doughty who scored the goal.
Yeah.
And Doughty put the puck stick side, right? Short side. And it was because the player had just lifted his stick, but he just kind of knocked it out of Luongo's hand. Now, mind you, Luongo loses his stick a little more often than I would like. I mean, that stick's flying around.
Now, Kelly Rudy did a piece on this on Hockey Night in Canada that I didn't really get to catch. Was it Glenn Healy? Was he saying that there was some kind of equipment that Luongo's using that causes him to...
Well, what they were doing is they played 2 sets of clips. The first set of clips was about the now famous Luongo's knob, yeah, putting where the puck would go in off of the knob and actually go into the net. And then they were playing...
He's outscored Pavel Dimitra this year, by the way.
Dimitra had 3 goals in the regular season.
Yeah, and it's two, got one, two, in the
two in the playoffs.
Oh, right. And Luongo had 4. Luongo's knob had 4 in the regular season and 1 in the playoffs. So.
Right. And you should just never make that hand gesture while you say knob, just so you know. Then they played a package of clips. Package, knob, get? You see where I went with that? They had a package of clips about all of the times that Luongo has dropped his stick. And Glenn Healy was suggesting that this might be an equipment problem, or maybe it's actually a problem with Luongo's hand, that if he's not able to hold onto his stick for whatever reason, and they showed that Luongo has an extra pad over his pinky and ring finger on the blocker hand that most goalies don't have.
Hmm.
And they were saying maybe there's some kind of mobility problem with his blocker hand that he's not able to hold onto the stick as well as he would like. That's why the knob is a little bit bigger, and that's also why we just see Luongo drops his stick quite often.
Kind of out of character for him to wear additional padding. I mean, he's the one that doesn't wear the throat guard that Canucks fans have been screaming at him to wear, especially when he took that one in the throat.
On the other hand, he was the guy who was wearing that extra, or he had the extra flap on his goalie pad.
That's true.
That was loose, that I can't remember who it was from the Eastern Conference was making fun of it and got the NHL to crack down on the fact that he wasn't tying it down.
Showed up at practice. It was the other guy that was making fun of him showed up at practice with the huge pieces of cardboard taped to the outside of his pads.
Right? Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's not unheard of for Luongo to adapt his pads for different reasons. He also tends to drop his stick so that he can, Hasek style, grab the puck with his blocker hand.
Yes.
When it's on the ice. And maybe he's doing that to kind of protect it against exactly what happened in that one game, game three or game four, when Ryan Smith's skate came down on his blocker and hurt his hand a little bit. So maybe that was extra padding to protect against that.
Yeah,
that's possible too.
Could be.
Going on, San Jose and Detroit, do you think Dan Boyle scores the winning goal either way?
It could very easily happen. Man, that was just a weird goal, wasn't it?
There have been some very interesting moments in this playoff.
I do not think that Dan Boyle would be scoring a winning goal of any kind against the Detroit Red Wings. Possibly against the San Jose Sharks, but not against the Detroit Red Wings.
Okay, so you, me, are taking Detroit then?
Yes.
All right, I've got Detroit in seven.
Six.
Reasons?
Joe Thornton.
By the way, last round I predicted that Patrick Marleau would have a magical series. And he did indeed. He pulled a disappearing act like no other.
Patrick Houdini.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that the way that they won this series, I think that these guys might have gained a little something. They might come out with a little bit of fire, and they may actually get past the second round this time.
Here's the reason that San Jose might come away with a win. Colorado benefited hugely from Craig Anderson. Absolutely stood on his head every single game. Jimmy Howard has yet to face those kind of shot totals in the playoffs. He hasn't played poorly. He may be up for the challenge. That being said, if Thornton, Marleau, and Heatley can raise their game even a little bit, and the Sharks as a team can pepper Howard with that many shots, I would not be at all surprised to see San Jose come away with a win.
I think all of these series are tough to call. Even the Montreal-Pittsburgh, with the way Montreal played so well as a team in front of Halak. Yeah, Halak was inhuman. But the team also blocked a million shots. They got in all the lanes. And they were desperate, you know, like they needed to win that series. If they play that way, if they're that hungry, they could beat anybody.
Yes, yeah, they could. Somebody said, one of the players was interviewed before the game and he said, quote, "There are no upsets in the NHL." That was his opinion of the state of competition in the NHL.
I don't buy that.
But I think amongst the 16 teams that were in the playoffs, I agree with him. No upsets.
I don't buy that because when you're looking at the number of shots and the puck possession, the time where that puck was in the Montreal end, the complete domination of, for example, San Jose in Colorado, and then, you know, Colorado won a game where they got 14 shots. San Jose had 47.
Okay, Colorado, yeah, I'll agree with you. They got pretty much dominated by San Jose. How much of the Montreal play do you think was rope-a-dope?
I don't think it was rope-a-dope at all. I do think it was smart coaching, though. It was basically clog the lanes, right? Block as many shots as you can. Frustrate the superstars because we know they're moody. And we know that they don't have a good defensive system. So we'll just wait for our opportunities.
Yeah, because as much as the shots were so lopsided, the number of really good scoring opportunities.
Washington had a lot of good scoring opportunities.
But they were always robbed them. I don't know. They were always just one-on-one. You didn't see the kind of multiple chances on the same shot. Yeah, they had the puck a lot. They were taking a lot of shots from everywhere. And some of those shots were really good shots. But the second and third chances weren't there a lot of the times. And there were so many blocked shots that I kind of wonder if it was rope-a-dope to some extent.
Hmm. Well, like I said, it was definitely good coaching. And it was a plan. And it was a plan that worked.
It was wickedly entertaining, whatever it was.
And I don't think it will work against Pittsburgh. I think they're just too
Crosby
good.
Crosby and Malkin are a completely different beast from Ovechkin and Semin.
And they have a better supporting cast, I think.
I don't know. They've got more role players, certainly, and they're better on the defensive side of the puck.
That's all I'm asking for.
Yeah, okay, I'll give you that.
Vancouver, Chicago, what do you think is going to be the biggest surprise in this series?
Biggest surprise? Dustin Byfuglien will spend a large amount of time in the penalty box.
So they're going to call him for the stuff that he did last year that he didn't get called for?
Yes.
Okay. I hope you're right. I think the biggest surprise in this series is going to be that in his sleep, the Green Men are going to trim Kane's mullet.
Do they know where the Blackhawks are going to be sleeping? Is that publicly available information?
Well, that's why it's going to be so surprising.
How would they enter the room? Are they going to like come in through the window?
Well, or? We can't say now. Then the Blackhawks will prevent it from happening. That's it for this edition of Bernier is a Turd. My name is Jason Carrillo.
I'm Chris Withers. Thanks for listening, folks.
You can find us on CanucksCorner.com. We are trying to get on iTunes. If anyone out there has a technological mind of any kind, coding, internet savvy kind of thing, please let us know, because quite frankly, I'm a complete idiot and Chris has a life. So if anyone knows anything about getting stuff on iTunes, please let us know. Once again, that's CanucksCorner.com. I would like to say thank you to the purveyors of music who have provided the theme song. Both the opening and the closing for Bernier's a Turd are provided by the Orchid Highway. Buddies of mine, they're originally from Winnipeg, spent some time in London, England, and now work out of Vancouver. They're an outstanding five-piece band, and they play great Britpop. These are just two examples of their stuff. Please go to orchidhighway.com. That's all one word, orchidhighway.com. Thanks, boys. You can follow Chris Withers on Twitter at...
That's Chris_Withers, because I'm original like that.
And you can follow me on Twitter at Bernier is a Turd. That's all one word, Bernier is a Turd on Twitter. I will tweet to you. Thanks, guys. Have a good night.
Go Canucks, go!
Someone couch in the lane, I heard the drunken voices dragging on some old refrain. But I'm climbing back on the train. I can explain if you'll just let me speak plain. I've got to sit and wait for my